and we're finishing up the review of steps 1 and 2. And I have the handout. If you were here last Saturday, bring it, bring it. It's excellent. Plus, we have a special birthday. Amy? Well, yeah. I'm excited. Friday, but Amy will be here Saturday. And, all right. We're on tape now. Let's behave. And then on Sunday night, we're finishing up the review of step 10 and 11. And that's been really good from Carrie, this message. And then on Sunday nights, we'll be going to working with others. And then we're going to do Dr. Bob's Nightmare and then start the book over. And then tonight, we're on AA number 3. Now, last week, we're in a vision for you. And I put last week's ad on the site. I tried to send it to people, but I clicked on it, and it sent a different one. I don't know. There's something wrong with it. So anyway, last week, we got Bill and Bob, and we got them together. And I forgot to mention that, you know, when they met in May of 1935, that it was June 10th that we say is AA's birthday. And that's supposedly, we're on page 156. It's in a vision for you. And so June 10th is what we consider AA's birthday. That's Dr. Bob's, quote, last drink. And they met in May, and then he worked the steps, remember? And then he got drunk at the AMA convention, then he came back, Dr. Bob, and then he made amends. And we're here today. And we spent one meeting where I looked at how the people who started the, who came together were all hopeless. You know, Roland and Ebby and Bill and the circumstances that put these people together, and how Bill entered the lobby. And he, fear gripped him because he thought he was going to drink. And then he shivered and he turned away from the bar in 1935 on that Saturday in May. And if he had gone in the bar, Ed might not be given his 37 years tonight because we wouldn't have AA. But God told Bill a bad idea, and then he said he turned away from the insanity of the first drink, and he thanked God. And so I consider that the turning point of AA, when Bill turned away from the bar, turned down to the thing. And then the second thing was when he met Dr. Bob. And then we're going to read about AA number 3. We're only going to cover a few pages because we had birthdays tonight. But this AA number 3, Bill Dodson, is on page 156. And there's so much information in these three pages on how you work with a new person, how, what they did, how he looked at things, and he lived to be sober quite a few years. He died sober. I saw his picture actually, Dr. Bob's house. They bought the house next door, and they have like a museum in there, and they have the pictures of all these guys. So you could see they were real people, and they have. A lot of the ancient AA archives. So here's Bill and Bob in 1935, and it says, life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves, but saw that they must keep spiritually active. Notice this? They must keep spiritually active. Now, how do you keep spiritually active? Isn't that a good question? They saw they must. Well, we do it through prayer, meditation, we inventory, and then we work with other people. So the two of them are sitting there in Dr. Bob's house, and they tried, before we get to where they went to the hospital, they actually tried to work with several people, and you can read about it in AA Comes of Age, and it's very interesting. But they went to the hospital, and they explained their need and inquired if she had a first-class alcoholic prospect. And what they don't say here is that when Dr. Bob was there and he asked the nurse if they had any prospects, she said, well, what about you, Dr. Bob? See, he thought nobody knew, you know. And I don't know if that's true, but it's a folklore. She replied, "Yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking." But here's a line that I don't think's true. "He's a grand chap when he's sober." And I wrote, on the outside, right? To appearances, he looked okay, but we know inside he was a mess. And then I said, just being a good chap is not good enough to be sober. See, whatever he appeared like, he couldn't live sober. And he'd been 8 times in 6 months to the hospital. I understand he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but just now we've got him strapped down tight. Here was a prospect, all right, but by the description, none too promising. Well, actually, I think he was very promising because he was really in bad shape. And the thing I find is that the more defeated the person is, the easier it is to work with them. And if they're not completely defeated, it's hard. I can't make anybody defeated. It says, the use of spiritual principles in such cases was not so well understood as it is now. So I wrote, do you understand how to use spiritual principles? Could you explain the spiritual principles to someone else? And what they're getting at, there was no book. And they had the Oxford group, and they had the 6 steps in the Oxford group, but they hadn't really tried to work with anybody together. Bill tried to work with people in New York. Remember, he couldn't get anybody sober, but he stayed sober. And he asked Lois, he said to Lois after 6 months, he says, people are dying in the house, nobody's sober. But she says, but you are, Bill. And so that made a big impression on him. He stayed sober the first 6 months. And you read in Bill's story, I read it when we looked at Bill W. in terms of the events, how he was really in serious emotional shape that whole time, but he was able to stay sober by trying to be of service to others. And he says, put him in a private room, we'll be down. 2 days later, a future fellow of AA stared glassily at the strangers beside his bed. Who are you fellows, and why this private room? I was always in a ward before. Now, in the beginning, when they sponsored people, when they put them in the hospital, the sponsor would pay for the patient, because a lot of these people didn't have any money. So one of the words that sponsorship meant were you sponsored their hospital bill. I think it was like $25. I mean, it was 1935. That's probably, you know, now that we have accelerated billing, but it was about 25. Yeah, because yeah, there you go. All right, we're having fun. It says, we're going to give you a treatment for alcoholism. And so that's really powerful. They had a treatment. They had a solution to his hopeless condition of mind and body. And so that is, and they're going to show you what the treatment is. Now here it says, hopelessness was written large on the man's face. Oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me. I'm a goner. Can anybody relate to that? But you see, it's different now because we have AA. And we have meetings, and people know about AA, and they know about where to go for recovery. But there wasn't any AA. There was no hope for him. He didn't know any solution. And he says, the last 3 times I got drunk on the way home from here. That sounds like an alcoholic, right? I'm afraid to go out the door. I can't understand it. He was in fear of his insanity. He couldn't understand why he couldn't make it, right? And it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. Remember, without help, it's too much for us. But we understand what happened. He had an obsession of the mind, and he couldn't live sober. So here's what they did. For an hour, the two friends told him about the drinking experience. Remember, we're supposed to tell him what it was like for us. Over and over, he would say, that's me, I drink like that. That's what you're supposed to do. You tell them your experience to see if they can relate. Now, the Big Book does that. Like Ed said, it does it for 54 pages. Doctor's opinion in the first 43 pages for the alcoholic to understand his condition of mind and body. And then they talk about the God on page 45 and the power. And he said, that's the men in the bed was told the acute poisoning from which he suffered. We poison our body and how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic and warps his mind. Anybody have a warped mind in here? It really affects it, yeah. You can't see it till you sober up, right? Yeah. You can't see how crazy you are. And then when you do your 4-step, you realize you should have been locked up. You know, the things we did and thought. There was much talk about the mental state preceding the first drink. So they told him about loss of control, how when he drank he couldn't control, and then they talked about loss of choice. Remember? Those are the two things that make us an alcoholic. Loss of control, and when we drink, and loss of choice in choosing to drink. Remember, at certain times we cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago. It says, "Yes, that's me," said the sick man, "the very image. You fellows know your stuff all right, but I don't see what good it'll do." So here's the thing. He understands the problem. He relates to them, right? He understands he's an alcoholic and what it means. "You fellows are somebody. I was once, but I'm a nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more than ever. I can't stop." He understood it. It's very powerful. You should read this with a new person and have them read it and see if they can relate to this. Because at this point, but this time they laughed. It said the future AA, "Damn little to laugh about that I could see." You know, we laugh when people tell us how what a mess they are. And we all commiserate. But he didn't think it was that funny. He's lying in the bed, remember? "The two friends spoke of their spiritual experience." You see, here's the deal. It says first you tell them what it was like, and then you tell them what happened. So they had his attention here. Remember, the big book says on page 20, what do I have to do? A new person's reading the book and see how they recover from a hopeless condition, mind, body, and it says the new person would ask themselves, what do I have to do? So what he's saying is that he knows he's gone. And now they're going to tell him what they did. So they spoke of their spiritual experience and told him about the course of action they carried out. So can you do that with someone? Can you tell them what you did so that they could have a spiritual experience, which was the solution? And the solution's the result of action. It's not a result of thinking. It's not a result of believing. It's a result of action. And they had an experience of the Spirit. They had a relationship with a power greater than themselves to change the way they saw things, and they didn't have to drink. He interrupted, "I used to be strong for church, but that won't fix it." He says, "I've prayed to God on hangover mornings and sworn that I'd never touch another drop, but by 9 o'clock I'd be boiled as in oil." And you see, that's why I really like these pages. Ow. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't boiled any lately. But that's why I really found this powerful when I was studying it. If you have a new person read this, I mean, this is such a powerful description of the hopelessness of alcoholics. And now, why did the prayers not work? He prayed and he never touched another drop because he was blocked from God, remember? He was powerless, but he had no relationship with God, so he had no power. God couldn't work in his life. So they gave him a day to think about it. They came back the next day and they found him more receptive. He had been thinking it over. "Maybe you're right," he said. Isn't that nice? Maybe you're right. You see, he's willing. We talked about willingness, right? He's becoming willing. He's opening his mind that maybe they're right. Well, they look a lot better than he did, right? And they're not in the bed. They're outside. And he says, God ought to be able to do anything. You see, he was understanding that God could do it. So he's actually taking the second step. But then he added, I like this, "He sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone." That's a great line, because that's what we did. We tried to do it alone. Anybody try to recover on their own? Mm-hmm. Anybody try to stop drinking on their own? Anybody swear off and then they're not gonna drink and then they drank that day? And he was doing it alone without God. So he's saying that maybe God could do this, because he never did it. And then on the third day, I love this, "The lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of his creator." He gave his life, his whole life. We talk about that a lot. You know, we don't just give alcohol, we give him our whole life. I have to fire myself as manager. We should give everybody sign a contract when they come in that they're going to fire themselves unconditionally running their life. I had to fire me and I hired God. That's worked out really well. And so he gave his life to the care and direction of his creator and said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. So he had all the elements you needed. He was ready to do anything, and he was ready to give his whole life to God. And he was willing to do anything. His wife came, scarcely daring to be hopeful. Can you imagine? He's been in there 8 times. Though she thought she saw something different. Remember, it says when you take the third step, all sorts of things happen, remember? We have a new power and peace flow in, just making the decision that you're not going to be God anymore. It says that we have power and peace. We lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and hereafter. It's on page 63. It says, I have a new employer, so I work for God, and he's going to provide everything I need if I keep close to him and perform his work well. And it says, we feel new power flowing, we enjoy peace of mind. As we discover we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. Those third step promises are really powerful. So something happened to him. He was different, and he had begun to have a spiritual experience. And that's what they're talking about, what I just read, is once you make a decision not to play God anymore, that's a powerful thing. Because I don't know about you, but it lifted a tremendous load off of me. I was exhausted from being God. Anybody else tired? And it was such a relief to finally completely surrender. And he'd begun to have a spiritual experience. And then this next paragraph, next two paragraphs, is really powerful. That afternoon, he put on his clothes and he walked from the hospital a free man. Now think about where he was the day before. And hopeless, knew he couldn't leave he was afraid to leave the hospital. And then something happened. He gave his life to God. He decided that he was willing to do to any length, and he was willing to give up running the show. And he did a thorough surrender step, and look what happened. That's the beginning of the freedom of the bondage itself, is to be willing to admit that you're in the bondage and you need to be free of it, and you're willing to go to any length to do it. And you're willing to give your bondage to God. And he entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequently men's gathering places of all sorts, often staying up all night. He lost the race by only a narrow margin. Now here's the line, every time I read it, I don't know, I still get a little emotional. But he had found God, and in finding God, had found himself. Anybody else think that's powerful? And what I wrote, he found his true self. See, when we do the four step, we see the person I created, not the person God created. And I can see my true self when I work the steps, the person God created. We talk about the left and right hand side of the card, right? And the person I created was selfish, dishonest, self-centered, fearful, impatient, intolerant. The person God creates is love, tolerant, patient, kind, caring, considerate. And that person is in me. I created the other person. So when I find God, I found myself. Remember it says, and the great reality is found deep inside of all of us. And so if you want to find the real you and find God, do the steps. And it says, that was in June of 1935. He never drank again. He too has become a respected and useful member of the community. He has helped other men recover as a power in the church from which he has been long absent. And I'm just going to read another paragraph and we'll open up. So you see, there were three alcoholics in the town who now felt they had to give to others what they had found or be sunk. Now, are there people in this room that are not working with other alcoholics? Ask yourself why. Ask yourself, are you different than Bill and Bob? And why you're not doing it? And whatever reason you come up with, it's not true. It may make sense, and I've heard them all. They're not true. You're telling yourself something because you just don't want to do it. But try to find somebody to work with. It's not hard. After several failures to find others, a fourth turned up. He came through an acquaintance who'd heard the good news. You see, word was getting around. They only had three people. Well, they knew Dr. Bob was sober, and that was a miracle in itself because he was very well known in the community. And then they talk about him, and I think we'll stop here, and then we'll probably finish the chapter next week. So I want to give time for people to share. Anybody like that story? Yeah. Powerful stuff. You see how well they can describe our disease? That's why this book is irreplaceable. You can't read it and not see yourself and not take your first step all the time. Anybody else take their first step tonight when you're reading this? Anybody remember how hopeless it was? All right. Congratulations again to Ann and Ed, and we'll open it up. Thanks, guys.